Fast Eddie here in the studio talking about the movie The Millionaire's Unit with Derek Greer, Ron King, Mark Wortman, and Harry Davison. Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Great, Eddie.
Hey.
Nice to be here.
I learned about this original Yale Aero Club back in 1916, which was founded by a small group of Yale students who came from really the highest segment of society. And they thought the U.S. was going to end up in World War I, which actually was declared 100 years ago today. And if the U.S. got into that war, they wanted to be able to fly. You know, aviation was just 13 years old at that point. But they knew, unlike most Americans, that the world of military aviation had shot ahead and had added a third dimension to the battlefields in Europe. And the U.S. wasn't prepared for that. So they put together, with their own considerable family resources, a flying club. It became the Yale Aero Club, grew to be 30 members. That was the foundations of the Naval Aviation Reserve. And then when the U.S. finally did go to war, they became the nucleus of the Navy's Air Service. So I wrote an article. That article attracted some attention and became a book.
So I was at the book launch. And Mark had interviewed me, and he'd interviewed my father. My father had flown with the Army Air Corps in World War II. My grandfather was one of the members of was the founding member of the first Yale unit. And we had a book party for Mark's book. And it was like going to a family reunion. All these people came together two generations later to celebrate this great story. And everybody brought a little piece of memorabilia from their grandfather's history. And we laid them out on this big old conference table at the book party. And it just gave us an inspirational idea. Mark had been under pressure to get his book written by his publisher, but we had the luxury of time on our side and all this unbelievable new resource material. Ron decided that this would make great material for a documentary film. Incorporated a little not-for-profit called Humanis Documentary Films Foundation. We raised, you want to guess how much money we raised for the Millionaires Unit?
Wait a minute. I'll bet it was $1 million.
You've got it.
Oh, we have a winner.
They don't call him Fast Eddie for nothing.
Hey, I try.
And we've been putting this movie together. We've gone from doing research from Key West to Kennebunkport, Maine. We've been filming overseas in Europe, in England, in France, in Belgium, in the Swiss Alps, in Italy, and also on the North Island of New Zealand, of all places.
You're going back in time, essentially, 100 years. There are very few original World War I aircraft left, and I don't think you could get one of them flying for love nor money. They're just too valuable. But yet you guys found aircraft to fly. Where did you find them?
Well, a friend of ours is a big collector, and as he says, we all know where the original engines are, and you know, we're all trying to get them. We knew that we wanted to film with World War I aircraft, replica aircraft, because we wanted people to understand what it was like to fly those planes 100 years ago. And we needed to stop with Camel. Two key members of the first Yale unit who were the best flyers wound up flying the Camel. And one of them became the Navy's only ace of World War I, and another one lost his life in a Camel. And there were really only four of them in the world. Our friend had one in California, but he didn't want to film with helicopters. There was one in England with an original engine, but it was mothballed. And then there was one in New Zealand, but we were a little worried that New Zealand was not going to look like the fields of France and Belgium. But they were really willing and ready to accept us, and they understood what we wanted to do. They gave us a huge discount. We could afford their services, and we went out there. Planes are owned by Peter Jackson, who is the director of the Lord of the Rings movies and the Hobbit movies. And his program, The Vintage Aviator, is run by a great guy and a great pilot named Gene DeMarco. And he flies the Dickens out of that Sopwith Camel. And we rented a helicopter and a Cessna. We got a couple red cameras to shoot in very high digital resolution and got up in the air with him and his pilots. There were several Fokker triplanes, a couple SE-5As that we flew with, and the weather was a little iffy, a little windy, a little rainy, but it was really exciting, gave us a wide range of backgrounds on which to shoot, and we spent 5 days with him. And it was really exciting.
Small world story. Gene DeMarco lived in Huntington, Long Island, which is where these aviators grew up. and learned to fly 100 years ago.
So you've got all kinds of cross connections, not just with relatives of the crew, but now you've got connections with aircraft and their family members going back 100 years as well.
Well, you're not going to believe the next one.
So this is Ron. We also had an opportunity to go to upstate New York to actually two different locations. One was the old Rhinebeck Aerodrome, where they fly some World War I aircraft. And we had an incredible opportunity to go to Hammondsport, New York, which is on the Finger Lakes, in this particular case, Lake Keuka. And the Curtis Museum there has a flying Model E boat, flying boat. And this was the type of aircraft that the first Yale unit first learned to fly in before they went to the front. And it's an extremely rare aircraft, number one. And number two, if you can find a flying one anywhere in the world, I don't know where that would be other than here at the Curtis Museum. And they don't fly it hardly ever. I mean, this was a very rare event. We got to film it while they were testing the aircraft for their public flight, and got amazing footage of this airplane flying. And we also put a GoPro camera on the head of the pilot, so we got some amazing POV footage similar to what we got in New Zealand from the pilots there. So not only do we have the Sopwith Camel flying, but we also have the Curtis Model E flying boat as well.
So you guys really did some digging and came up with some real gold, because not only were you looking for reproduction aircraft that were period correct, but you wanted period correct engines as well.
Yeah, I think the one in New Zealand is a Clerget rotary, but if you've heard the rotary engine of a Sopwith Camel, there is nothing like it, and there's really no replicating it, and really what we were after.
Our goal really was around authenticity, so we wanted to give people a sense of both the history, but also of the physicality of flying one of these planes. When you leave the theater after seeing this film, I want you to have to feel like you got to put your hair back in place, because you've felt like you've been in the cockpit of this airplane.
We put cameras in the cockpit. We even recorded the sound, just the sound of the engine as it was flying from within the cockpit. So you get a very good sense of what being in that cockpit was like, what the movement of the plane is. You get the sound. We're also filming it from the air, so as if you were another plane flying against or with that aircraft. And then from the ground, there's some lovely dogfight sequences of half dozen, maybe eight planes in the air at one time, all zooming around. It looks pretty great.
That's another thing you have to consider, too, because the replicas, they probably fly better than the actual aircraft did, especially the Sopwith Camel. That was a pretty dangerous airplane to fly. How did it look when you guys were shooting film of it?
Well, it looks fantastic. It takes off immediately from the ground. And, of course, we trusted Gene. We knew what he could do. But the Sopwith Camel cost a lot of deaths in World War I. As much, and even the two flyers that we know that fly them, Gene and Javier Arango, who has one in California, they both said, yep, we had read about it, we were prepared, but we really weren't prepared. Once you get up in the air, you really got to fight with it. Turn right, and it immediately dives to the right. You turn left, and because of the rotary engine, it immediately goes up to the left. And beginning pilots in World War I, a lot of them met their crash and their death the first time they tried to take off in a Sopwith Camel.
The Sopwith Pup, the predecessor, was actually, from what I've read, a gentler airplane to fly. The Camel was known for that, and experienced pilots were able to use that as a defensive tactic against the Germans.
Indeed, they said it could turn inside any other World War I aircraft. And we've got an interview from 1960 with one of our characters, Dave Ingalls, and he said he would take that above any other characteristic of a plane. He said you couldn't run away from a fight. He said, so once you're there, you were going to be there until the very end of it.
And what kind of logistics did you guys have to come up with to put all of this together? First off, there's the travel. That itself had to be incredible.
The hardest thing for me was just sort of setting up shot lists, because you need different POVs to put together the story of what you want the planes to do. Then you need to figure out from which aircraft you're shooting. Is this a helicopter shot? We only had maybe a couple hours with a helicopter. We had multiple hours with the Cessna. So what can the Cessna capture? What can the helicopter only capture that the Cessna can't? Where do we place the GoPros? How do we cushion them so that they don't vibrate? And so that was pretty tough. Also corresponding with shooting from the ground as well, all to make it seem rather seamless and let the audience go along and understand what was developing in the sky.
I'd say the 16-hour flight to New Zealand was probably the hardest part of that. Everything else was pretty much joy and fun. Actually, one of the misperceptions, Eddie, about this business of flying antique World War I aircraft is that the British lost 14,000 aviators in World War I, and 8,000 of those men lost their lives in training. There's this misperception that pilots were glorified heroes and knights of the air engaging in combat in the skies. But the average life expectancy of a troop in the trenches was 28 days. The average life expectancy of an aviator was 26.
On that note, this was Mark. Got to know Igor Sikorsky's son, great helicopter developer and inventor and designer. And in World War I, he was a designer of bombers for Russia. And his son said that the way you could tell a great aircraft designer back then was because he was alive.
You have this movie coming out here at AirVenture. Are you going to be introducing this into the movie theaters?
We are. We've been working with PBS. We don't have a deal yet or a distribution deal in place, but we've been working with aircraft and military museums around the country, most notably the National Naval Aviation Museum in Pensacola, the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum in Washington, the National World War I Museum in Kansas City, the Cradle of Aviation Museum in Long Island. We will get it out on television and out on DVD. Those plans still need to come together. We also want to mention that Bruce Dern is the narrator of our film. And it turns out that Bruce is the grandnephew of Kenny McLeish, who was one of the first Yale unit members. Kenny was the younger brother of Archibald McLeish, who became the Librarian of Congress and one of the poet laureates of the United States. And Kenny lost his life in the last 3 weeks of the war. And Bruce knew about this heritage and saw a rough cut of our film about 3 years ago and came on to narrate it for us. And so it really is kind of a family affair.
Yeah, we're kind of hoping that the connection that he has to the story will resonate in his voice. People can follow us on our website, www.millionairesunit.org.
We've been talking to Derek Greer, Ron King, Mark Wortman, Harry Davison. The movie is The Millionaires Unit, and this is EAA Radio.